Do you feel as though you're always right or always have to get it right? Pastor Dave Rolfe says that's really foolish thinking.
There's a lot of pressure in our society that you need to get it right. But, you know, and that's an unhealthy pressure for sure. You're trying to figure out what the best thing to do is. You don't need to add to that the pressure of, if I get it wrong, it's all over. You're gonna get it wrong a lot of the time. You have to understand that. Now, what's funny, I think Christians, in some ways, become even more invested in being right than other people do.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
We're back in the Proverbs today on The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe. Pastor Dave is about to continue his series, Smarter Living. Those of you Andy Griffith Show fans like I am probably get a good chuckle at the character Barney Fife, who came across as a know-it-all. But while it makes for a good sitcom, it's no way to live our lives. Many people today are under the impression that they're always right and never like to admit it when they're wrong. And Pastor Dave will set out to show us from the Proverbs there's a much better way to think and live.
We're going through the various teachings of Solomon from the book of Proverbs, how to do life better. And what we're going to talk about today is this. We've talked about pride and you know, that sort of mentality comes up a lot. But in particular today, we're going to be considering the fact that we always think we're right. People just think they're right. And what's interesting isn't just that you think you're right, but how certain you are that you are right. We have differences of opinion, but we're also locked into the conviction that I'm sure I am right. Even the greatest experts can be wrong a lot. Somebody did a study of medical research, and of all of the new medical discoveries that have been proven, within 3 years, like 80% of them have been disproven. In business and investing, people who are experts on investment, their results are shown in tests to be about the same to somebody who just flips a coin and makes choices that way. The Red Sox at one point had won 3 of the last 5 major league championships with Babe Ruth as their best player, pitcher and outfielder. But they thought it was the owner of the Red Sox decided it was a good idea to sell Babe Ruth to the Yankees for $100,000 that he wanted to invest in a Broadway play. That was a big mistake. Albert Einstein's teachers believed that he was mentally retarded, you know, and partly because he was probably dyslexic and autistic, but he got turned down by the university when he applied and ultimately went to a trade school at first before he was finally able to weasel his way in. Michael Jordan, you know, arguably one of the greatest basketball players ever, was cut from the team in high school when he was a sophomore. But people who think they know are so sure that what they think they know is actually fact. We become so committed to believing that we are right. Here's a few expert opinions in the past. The president of the Michigan Savings Bank said, "The horse is here to stay, but the automobile is only a novelty, a fad." Harry Warner of Warner Brothers in 1927 said, "Who in the blank wants to hear actors talk?" The Western Union internal memo said, "This telephone has too many shortcomings to be seriously considered as a means of communication." A scientist and academic in 1828 said, "Rail travel at high speed is not possible because passengers unable to breathe would die of asphyxia if it got above 30 miles an hour." The president of the Royal Society said, "X-rays will prove to be a hoax." Thomas Watson, the chairman of IBM, said, "I think there is a world market for maybe 5 computers." And Daryl Zanuck, the head of 20th Century Fox in 1946, said, "Television won't be able to hold on to any market it captures after the first 6 months. People will soon get tired of staring at a plywood box every night." It seems like the more someone is sure of themselves, the more we make them an expert. But the truth is, our record of being right is not all that good, and yet we continue to believe everything that we think. We're pretty sure we're right about it. We all think that we are right. Now, turn over to Proverbs chapter 16, and we see kind of the central problem here. Just believing that you're right isn't necessarily a huge problem in and of itself, except that when you combine our conviction that we are right with our propensity to be so wrong, that's where the problem. If you're just wrong, it's no big deal, as long as you're not completely convinced that you're right when, in fact, you're wrong. Proverbs 16 and verse 25, Solomon says, "There is a way that seems right to a man." Literally, that seems right. It's on the face of it. It just looks right. "But its end is the way of death." That's really the problem, is that we all think we're right. We are usually wrong, and the consequences of our wrongness combined with our arrogance is deadly. Sometimes we are so convicted of something that we do that which destroys us. This is really a challenge for anyone who's in a leadership position. Whether you are a leader in a business aspect, or whether you are a parent leading your family, or someone who influences your friends, or if you're involved in leadership in the church, this is a huge problem, because if we are going to lead people, and if most people are wrong, even though they think they're right, it gets really tricky, because it means to lead, you have to be willing to go against what most people say. I've told you before, one of my professors, Charles Feinberg, who's been with the Lord for many, many years, but he used to say, in the beginning, there were two people, and they took a vote, and it was unanimous, and they were wrong. And the majority has been wrong ever since. That presents a real challenge to leaders, because you need to be able to make a decision that affects other people while you understand that usually most of those people aren't even going to agree with you. But even further is that you might be wrong. And most of us don't think that way. Sometimes we think of, as a leader, I need to do the right thing, even if people think it's wrong. And that's admirable, but it becomes even more complicated to say, I'm going to stand up and make the call because I'm your mom, that's why. And at the same time going, but I am just as likely to be wrong as you are. It's just somebody has to lead. Somebody has to make a call. We can't constantly be at a stalemate. And so it's a major problem for anybody who's trying to lead other people. Flexibility, the willingness to change your mind, is so important. To be able to just say, I thought this, but I was wrong. See, if you end up continuing to hang on to a bad decision, even when you realize that you were wrong, it's deadly. It will destroy you. We should be able to have courage and conviction in making decisions, but then to say, I just want you to understand, I could be wrong. And if it ends up that, I'm wrong and you're right, then we'll make some changes. We'll do it your way. We can't afford to get locked into a position that may or may not be right, is just as likely to be wrong as it is to be right. I've mentioned before the book Being Wrong by Catherine Schultz. Really a great book. I'm trying to analyze why it is that we are so threatened by the fact that we could be wrong. If you can't admit that you're wrong sometimes, it means you're going to be locked into being wrong. Your wrong becomes permanent at that point. There's a lot of pressure in our society that you need to get it right. But, and that's an unhealthy pressure for sure. You don't need the added, you're trying to figure out what the best thing to do is. You don't need to add to that the pressure of, if I get it wrong, it's all over. You're going to get it wrong a lot of the time. You have to understand that. Now, what's funny, I think Christians in some ways become even more invested in being right than other people do. We feel like we have to be right. We have to get it right. But God's grace, the fact that when we get it wrong, He's still with us. He still loves us. He forgives us. God actually always knows the right thing, and He's okay with letting us do things that aren't the best decisions. But we seem like so invested in being right. We want to do that. There are no arguments. I mean, political arguments can be brutal sometimes, but man, theological arguments, those are deadly. Throughout church history, so many people were literally killed because of, well, they had this theological position and I have that one. There's no reason why we should be so dogmatic. We need to have courage of conviction for sure, but we shouldn't feel like everything is hanging on us getting it right. And every decision should not be a question of, look, here's what I know to be true. I have this verse that I use to back me up. And if you don't believe what I believe, you're rejecting not me, you're rejecting God. That's really unhealthy. God's grace makes it safe for us to be wrong. God's grace makes it perfectly acceptable that we have the capacity to be able to recover if we got the wrong call, which we, in fact, will do often. Now, turn over to Proverbs 21 and verses 2 and 3. And we get some insight into what's most important to God. He starts off Proverbs 21 and verse 2. And this summarizes the problem we were just talking about. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes. Everything I do, I think is right. Everything I think, I believe is right. That's why, that's my position. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. To do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. What the Lord cares about is our heart. What he cares about is our character. He's not so worried about whether or not we are right or wrong. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that there isn't such a thing as right and wrong. There certainly is absolute right and absolute wrong. It's just that our capacity to discern what it is varies greatly. So what Solomon's saying here is, you know, God, as he said, the Lord weighs the hearts. That word for weigh is a word that would refer to a legal proceeding, that he, you know, considers all the options and balances it out. And then when he says to do righteousness and justice, that word justice is a word that is a legal term of weighing out and considering it. And doing that, taking the time to do that, is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. In other words, God cares a whole lot more about your character than he does about you getting it right. He cares about who you are. When you think about it, there are a lot of things that Christians argue about from Scripture. Somebody will have this verse that says this, and somebody else goes, well, I see this verse and it says that. And it used to really frustrate me in certain areas where I thought, man, the Bible seems sort of ambiguous. How do I weigh this out? And quite often, the apparent ambiguity in the Bible is in areas that seem really important to me. Like, for instance, soteriology, how people get saved. There have been wars fought over soteriology, and people argue about it constantly because the Bible talks, for instance, about God's choice of people, that he elects certain people. But then it also talks about the fact that everyone has a choice themselves. Now, how do you put that together? It's like, God, why didn't you just say, look, the Calvinists are right. Bang, 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 bang. 5 points, case closed. But you don't find the 5 points of Calvinism in there. Or why didn't he just say, look, I don't know, you get your choice and it all works out in the end. And everybody finds, for every verse that says that God chose you before the foundation of the earth, there's another verse that Jesus weeping over Jerusalem saying, man, how I longed to gather you as a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not. See, interestingly, the fact that God leaves that in an ambiguous situation must mean that that isn't the most important thing to him. When you consider eschatology, future things, I believe from Scripture that the Bible teaches that someday when we don't know it's going to happen, and it could happen today before third service, or it might happen 1,000 years from now, but the Lord will come in the air, draw his people up, snatch them away to himself in what we call the rapture, And then he will pour out his judgment on the earth for a seven-year tribulation. And then he'll come down. We'll come with him. He'll set up his kingdom based in Israel. And he'll rule and reign over the earth for 1,000 years. And then we will go into the eternal state. That's my conviction. I think I'm right. But the problem is there are some good people who differ, and they have verses that support mid-tribulation rapture, a post-tribulation rapture, a no rapture, an all-millennialism. And so, like, these are all people who believe the Bible who look at it and come up with different conclusions. So what I have to say is God could have written about 3 verses that would have solved every argument about eschatology, but he didn't do it because apparently that wasn't the most important thing to him. When you read your Bible, you do find out what the most important thing is to God, and it's that you love other people, that you're nice to other people. But isn't it ironic that when we fight about things within which we differ, that the first thing we trade away is that love that he says is the most important thing, is the way that people will know that we follow him, is what's the ultimate card to him. It's what Jesus says, look, you can summarize the whole Old Testament, the whole known Bible at the time, by just saying this, look, love God with everything in you and love your neighbor the way you love yourself. That's it. And yet, we can show such a lack of love in arguing about things that God didn't think were really important enough for him to offer us some clarity. It's not ambiguous about that. Now, in Catherine Schultz's book, she talks about the more you argue with people, you start out by believing that the people must just be ignorant, that if you can give them the right information, that they will come to the same conclusion that you have. But then, she says, after you give them the information and they still don't change their position, then you decide they're not just ignorant, they're actually stupid. They're just not able to process. But then you talk with them some more and you go, they don't seem stupid. So if they're not just ignorant and they're not just stupid, I think they're evil. They're just bad people. And you see this in every area in which we differ. You can just go, well, once people read this argument, oh, imagine politically, you're going, I think they just don't know the truth. So then you give them the truth and they're like, nope, I'm still not voting the way you're voting. Okay, look, you're really dumb. Let me bring this down really at a low level. And, you know, and then ultimately you're like, they're just evil. It's just the devil is driving them to do what they're going to do. But we have to start with this. God cares more about your heart. I heard a pastor this weekend saying that people are sick of hearing about the love of Jesus, and they actually want to see the love of Jesus in action. And if, in fact, our character is constantly compromised, then whether we're right or wrong isn't even going to matter. People may reject the truth just because we are such jerks about explaining our understanding of the truth. Now turn over to Proverbs chapter 16. And Solomon gives us in the first 3 verses kind of an outline of how to work through this kind of stuff. Proverbs 16, beginning with verse 1. The preparations of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. In other words, you can begin to think and plan and form your opinions and come up with your vision and your ideas. That's good. Realize this. God is going to have the last word. Ultimately, we'll find out if we're right or wrong. Go ahead and make your plans, but do all your plans with the idea, but I could be wrong. And, you know, it's all about if the Lord wills. Then he goes on and says, all the ways of man are pure in his own eyes. Yeah, everybody thinks that their motives are pure, that their logic is sound, that the information that they have is sufficient. Everybody thinks that. But the Lord weighs the spirit. Again, the Lord cares about the heart. The Lord weighs out the essence of who we are, the spirit, the ruach, our very breath, our life, who we are. God is going through a process of actually sifting that and performing balance for it. So, in verse 3, so commit your works to the Lord. What you're going to do, commit it to him. And that word commit in Hebrew is a word that means to roll. The idea is, okay, God, here you go. You're taking what you are doing, but you're just going, this is yours. You can do whatever you want with it. Commit your ways to the Lord and your thoughts. And that word is a word that in Hebrew, it means things that are woven together. The idea is your design, your plans, your structured system of how you see and understand your life and the world. It will either stand or fall. Your vision will either stand, it'll be established, or it won't. But God ultimately is the one who's going to work all that out. You know, so one thing that I think of when I look at this is, where do we get all this pressure to be right? Why do we feel like it's so important that we find the truth? If, in fact, that so often what you end up thinking is the truth turns out to not be, it's either not all of the truth or it's not even the truth at all. It could be completely wrong. Understand this. God is not counting on you to be right. God does not need you to get it right in order for him to be God. If you deal with people who you think are just, you know, really clueless, well, you know a little bit of how God feels, because everybody he deals with is an idiot. And not only that, but they're stupid and arrogant. It's one thing to go, phew, I don't know. But to say, I know, and then say something stupid, God's not tripped out by that. He isn't counting on you to get it right.
We're receiving God's wisdom from the Proverbs right here on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe. It's part of a series called Smarter Living. And you can request a CD copy by calling 949-362-7475. I should also mention this entire series is available on a USB for a donation of $10 or more. You'll receive all 51 messages in the series that'll lead you to smarter living as you hear and learn to live by God's wisdom from the Proverbs. So call us at 949-362-7475 and ask for the Smarter Living Thumb Drive. Our programs are also available online at thebalancedword.com. Thank you for your support of the Balanced Word Radio Ministry. It allows us to bring Pastor Dave's teachings to stations like this one all across the nation. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. You can hear him teach on a Sunday morning at any one of these three times, 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information or to live stream. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. With this final thought for the day, here again is Pastor Dave.
There's only one way that we truly can please God, okay? The Bible, in Hebrews chapter 11, it makes this really clear. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. For whoever comes to God needs to believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. If you back up a few verses to where Paul says in Hebrews 11, 1, faith is the substance of things hoped for, they don't exist yet, the evidence of things that you don't see. And I think faith is one of the most misunderstood concepts, which is really bad because faith is the only way that we can please God. See, if you are certain of something, you can no longer exercise faith in that something because it doesn't take faith. If I, take this pulpit here, if I just decide to put my weight on it and lean on it, that doesn't take faith. I've done that many times. I helped carry this thing in here. It's solid. It's not going anywhere. So it doesn't take faith. Now, if I was going to lean on one of Anson's guitars, that might take faith because it looks like it could shake and it could fall. Our lives, as we seek to please God, as we seek to do the things that he wants us to do, it depends on faith. And faith depends on uncertainty. The more sure you are of yourself, the less need you have for faith. We hear people errantly saying things like, boy, if I could just see a miracle, my faith would increase. People think, if we could just find Noah's Ark, wow, people's faith. No, if you found Noah's Ark, you would need less faith. Right now, I believe that Noah's Ark happened. I believe that God rescued the world in a big wooden boat. And I don't have to see it. If I saw it, I'd be sort of disappointed because I'd be like, I knew that already. But all of a sudden now, I don't have faith in that anymore because I've seen the thing. And in so many ways, just, you know, making decisions out of uncertainty, that's ultimately what faith is. You just make the decision.
We're discovering balanced living through the Word of God here on The Balanced Word. We'll continue our study of the Proverbs next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel and online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up.